Welcome to Influential She, the podcast about accelerating the influence of women in the world.
You will find us to be a fresh voice in an old conversation.
And here we are, your amazing co-hosts, Deb Soholt
and Mel Schopp.
Well, hi, everyone. Welcome back to another podcast of Influential She, where we're working to accelerate the influence of women in the world. I'm your co-host, Deb Soholt.
And I'm Mel Schopp, and we are just really thrilled today to have as our guest, Sarah Brown-Wessling. And Sarah, before I introduce you, I want to talk a little bit about what we are focusing on today, which is one of our high-leverage practices that's called What Is. And we have chosen this specifically based on a conversation we had with you earlier that I know we want to replicate some of those parts as well as find out more about you. When we talk about what is, I think we all bring with us, a background of experiences, but a lot of times those experiences are based on what's going on around us. And so if we want to be influential, we have to get real about what is and really take that honest assessment of where we're at, what's going on within our lives. And, you know, it's really that part of understanding the impact on that reality of where we're at within our current existence and our current lives at the place that we're at. And it can change.
Sure.
And Sarah, I remember the first time I met you, you had just taken on the role as National Teacher of the Year, which is an amazing opportunity and really an honor and says a lot about you as an individual. You came to Pierce, South Dakota. You were our keynote speaker at the South Dakota Teacher of the Year Banquet.
Yes, I remember it well.
Yeah. And I think you came with, did you come with your parents or your grandparents?
My grandparents live there. Yeah, who live in South Dakota.
Yeah. And, you know, I just remember being so, and that was in, 2010 or 20, was your reign like in 2010 and 2011 or how did that work?
So it was primarily in 2010.
Okay. That's what I remembered. Yeah.
Yeah.
And you were just amazing. And I remembered you from way back then. And your legacy has sort of followed you. And I know we're going to talk a little bit more about how that experience has really impacted and shaped many of the things within your life. So maybe do you want to just kick off and start a little bit about what that opportunity had for you? And then we're going to back up and kind of give you a backstory. But I think that alone has made a big difference in you being able to talk about what's the reality of your life today and what was it back then?
Well, so first of all, thank you so much for inviting me to be part of this conversation. I think that these are such important conversations for us to have, certainly together, and then in our larger groups of women as we kind of try to manage and figure out just how we work in the spaces that we have. So, and I guess I would certainly say that the experience of being the National Teacher of the Year was most certainly an honor, but more than anything, it truly was a very steep learning curve. Because it is an honor, but it really is a job. And it's a job that on one hand I felt completely unprepared for, and on the other hand, I felt like every single day that I had spent in a classroom was getting me ready for that work. So, when you're a teacher, you don't go into teaching, kind of imagining that there is kind of this, I think, other big world outside of the classroom. And so for me, for the first almost about 13 years of my career before this happened, you know, my world largely was the classroom and then the ways that I tried to connect with professionals, through conferences and professional organizations and writing and things like that. But, certainly the job of being the National Teacher of the Year required me to take the skills that I had learned as a teacher, which things like being flexible and things like being able to respond to the needs of the people right in front of me, holding inordinate amount of detail at any one time, being able to think on your feet, having a really careful attention to what people need to learn and how best I could teach them. You know, all of those things really did prepare me for that work.
Sarah, you know, I think you've really tapped into something interesting that we've been thinking about a lot in Leveraging What Is, that you really have to have the capacity to assess your internal environment, which we call kind of the microsphere of you. And you talked about that in, you know, I felt prepared as a teacher. I brought a lot of skills forward to this new role, but then also to be able to assess what is in your external environment, which is the macrosphere, the bigger picture of you, and how you felt, okay, at one hand, I felt prepared, and the other hand, I didn't feel prepared. Talk a little bit more about just kind of what went through your mind. I mean, what was the human reality of going, being able to say, okay, I'm going to confidently go into that space, even though I'm feeling somewhat insecure about what that space even is?
Yeah, well, I think, again, being a teacher actually really prepared me for that, because in some ways, that's every day. Like, in some ways, you know, I
suppose
know,
it is.
Yeah, I mean, I know, here's what I think my space is going to be. But when you're dealing with humans, right? And especially when, you know, you're dealing with young adults and teenagers, you may think you know what's going to happen. But the reality of what's in front of you is the very first thing you have to read all the time. But I think that, you know, that relationship between kind of the internal and the external, is really, really crucial. It's probably the reason why I make reflection, you know, just really part of my daily practice, in informal ways. And then I also make it part of my professional practice in, a lot more probably formal ways, things that I'd like to hold myself accountable to, because I think it is figuring out how do you merge those two? And how do you allow your internal self to learn from the external reality, and how do you, manage the external reality from the internal work that you've done. And so I think that that certainly is important. I remember, though, the moment to kind of more specifically answer your question, I remember the like this moment of collision of those two realities, when I was named the Iowa Teacher of the Year. They actually pull you out of the classroom here in Iowa, to serve as an ambassador of education in the state. And, at the time I was very, very pregnant with my third child. And I remember being, you know, so excited at the external reality of being able to do this work and what that could mean. And then there was this moment where I realized, oh my goodness, they're going to pull me out of the classroom. And my whole internal reality just crumbled. And I did not know what that would mean. I didn't know what it would mean. I was like immediately afraid for everything. I was afraid because I thought, well, what if I, you know, leave the classroom for a year? Can I come back and still be a good teacher? Or will I lose it? Is this a thing that you lose if you stop doing it? I worried about the work that I had committed to and started in the district. What would happen if I walked away from that for a year? Would I be letting people down? I was terrified about what would happen at home. If all of a sudden my life required more travel and I was not going to be there every morning and every afternoon and every night, like what would that entail? So there was, you know, definitely a bit of a crisis for me, when those two things met. And I think that, you know, when we talk about this work, and we talk about kind of this concept, I don't think the wisdom is to avoid the crisis, right? I think that the wisdom is to make sure that when these crises happen, you have the right people around you to help you through it. Because the crisis ultimately forced me to grow, and the crisis helped me to see things differently and better and more clearly. But I think our human nature is to avoid it.
So, you know, Sarah, I've been listening, and you've talked a lot about what we call the microsphere or that internal environment. You obviously are a person who is good at reflection and thinking inwardly, but I'm really curious about the macrosphere and how that changed once you became this other person, which became the National Teacher of the Year. And specifically, you know, how were the people around you? Were they encouraging? Were they mm-hmm. there supporting you along the way? Your work environment obviously had to change as well. And can you talk a little bit about that? Because that, we can be really solid internally and think that things are going, but there are those two different universes that impact who we are and the what is that can change our trajectory quite significantly. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think that... So the quick answer is yes, it did impact relationships and it certainly did impact the people around me. And I think that it, in some cases, it had a really positive impact. And in some cases, it revealed to me, or confirmed for me, probably things that I had already known about the state of relationships that I had, whether that was professional or whether that was personal. And I think that kind of thinking about the ripple effects of our decisions, and the ripple effects of our changing influence as women, does become really, I think, part of this conversation. And again, I think it is to a degree trying to mitigate our own fear. Right? Trying to kind of like, how do you mitigate the fear of becoming more influential? Because I think that we oftentimes want to nurture and we want to keep people safe and happy. And that means things aren't necessarily changing. And so when we change, we are then, you know, forcing other systems to change as well. So, I had, you know, professional relationships that actually grew because of this. And they were just really enhanced because, I was learning things that some of my colleagues were really interested in. And so we could grow together in that way. And in other cases, it's just, you know, I think it's just a natural, a growing apart, you know, and so that was really tough because I had to face the loss of some really close professional relationships. And not too long after this, I couldn't keep my marriage together. So I think, again, both professionally and personally, these things happen, but I can also tell you, one thing that I believe and one thing that I practiced. So one thing that I really believe is that really good things or really bad things just highlight or illuminate for us the reality of what's already there. And so when I think about these relationships that grew and the relationships that, I had to walk away from, I recognize that this event did not make either of those things happen. That this event and the way that I grew because of it, the way I leaned into this work, into this other version of myself that was already there, but it just didn't really have a channel or an avenue yet. I wasn't changing who I was growing, I think, what was already there. And so I think that that was indicated in the relationships. And I think probably the second thing that I practice that in a lot of ways I still really do, is I think a lot about outsourcing. So, and to some degree, I probably had to figure this out, when I went from, you know, being in a marriage to being a single parent, that I needed to figure out, how do you outsource your needs? And this belief that I think sometimes we have culturally that one person can be everything to us, is a misnomer and probably a myth that we need to confront. But, I really thought about which friends do I need for which kinds of conversations? And as I started to develop kind of these little cohorts of people around different facets of my own personal and professional needs, I found that I didn't feel alone. I found a lot of strength in those groups of largely women often, And I was just able to continue to grow because I felt supported in these ways. But I also had to very deliberately create those circles.
I love that phrase, outsourcing your needs, because that is really responding to your environment of knowing what is and knowing where you're at and what you need. Because I think Deb and I have talked a lot about, and Deb, you can jump in here anytime, that when we entered our professional lives, we also believed that we really had to do it all. You know, here were these women who are going gung-ho into a profession, but then really believed, and I know I believed, that I still had to be the ultimate mother, wife, take care of everything, pretend like nothing was ever bothering me. And so I think that in knowing that reality is really, really important to know who you can call on for those outsourcing of your needs. Deb, do you have it? I know you and I've talked about this a couple times.
I think, Sarah, you just, you know, you really talked about something that's so important about not necessarily everything you need is wrapped up in one person. And I think there's, to your point, a myth that, you know, a spouse, a friend, that they can handle the whole breadth of you at any single moment, and that somehow that's disappointing when they can't. And I just think it's like virtually impossible that you have really brought out that your support can come from different avenues and yet be very rich and rewarding relationships. They just all don't have to be one and the same.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, again, it's, you know, we have a responsibility in this, right? So it's not just something that comes to us or something that we wish for. I mean, we might wish for it, but that's not, wishing isn't going to make it happen, or wanting it isn't going to make it happen.
Sarah, when you talk about all of the different roles that you have, being a classroom teacher and being a single mom, and then the National Teacher of the Year responsibilities, and I know that you're doing more national work now, what do you think about the kind of influence you can have based on the amount of time and space within your life?
Yeah, so I think that it's important for us to, I think, to change the conversation around the idea of can you have it all or can you not have it all? And I think that probably to our detriment, we've kind of looked at that conversation as a binary, like either you can or you can't. And I think that really it's maybe more productive for us to think about how you can have things over time, right? So, I used to think a lot about compartments, and I used to think that the best way to kind of manage all of these different components of life, was to compartmentalize them. And then ultimately what happened for me was that the compartments just kind of stacked on top of each other. You know, like emotionally, figuratively, intellectually, and just got really, really heavy. So I really kind of shifted the way that I think about this idea. Can you have it all? Can you not have it all? And I kind of let that conversation go for myself. And instead I just really started to work at, trying to be incredibly present to where I am right now. And understanding that kind of everything has its time.
You know, Sarah, when you talk about when you talk about that, what's in front of you, I had that same kind of choice when I was very interested in running for political office, and now I am a state senator. But at the time, my daughter was in high school, and she probably would have been okay if I had run for the state senate, but I wouldn't have been okay because I would have missed all of her basketball games. But I'm telling you, I really wanted it because it was like a space where I thought I could be influential. I would really like to try this on for size. I had a lot of ambition around it. It was almost a little bit of a grieving within myself to let that go. Did you experience any of that? And then I ran later. There was another time for that.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And I think in some big ways and in some small ways. So, and I think being able to do what you just said, which is to call it what it is really important. Because there is a bit of a loss, right? And it is just healthy and normal to grieve those things. But then to not stay in that space forever. So I remember when, I finished my year, as the National Teacher of the Year, And that does like that does have kind of a definitive time period. And then every National Teacher of the Year kind of manages the time afterwards differently. And I've really used it to continue to, you know, to branch out and to do different kinds of work. But, you know, immediately after that, there were lots of job offers and lots of opportunities to pursue all kinds of things that sounded really exciting and really interesting to me. And even just the idea of teaching high school English in a different place sounded really exciting and interesting to me. But it wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right time. It wasn't the right time for my family. It wasn't the right time for my kids. In order to really, I think, do the kind of work that I wanted to do, which was maintain a classroom and do all this other stuff. I remember sitting in my car one day, like kind of realizing I was going to need to say no, to all of these things because it just wasn't the right time. And it was really sad. Yeah. I remember just sitting in my car and crying. And then also not too long after that, though, something did emerge, you know, the teaching channel came around and they wanted me to do work that would not take me out of the classroom. So it did happen. But I had to live in that space of uncertainty, and a little bit of sadness long enough for something else to emerge. And I think that that's sometimes, again, what we fear. We fear kind of that uncertainty. And so we preclude it. You know, we choose something and we grab something. And it might not be the right thing.
You know, when you say that, this is just so reminiscent for me of when I was done, when I'd chosen to, I don't know, I call it re-careering instead of retiring as the Secretary of Education. So, you know, for so many years, I had the title of the Secretary of Education. So you introduce yourself. I go to every committee meeting and legislature and, hi, I'm Melody Schaaf, Secretary of Education. You know, go to a national meeting, Melody Schaaf, Secretary of Education, South Dakota. The week after I was done, I was on a conference call with a group that were going to be part of a panel discussion, and I was going to be facilitating that panel. And we got on the call and we didn't know each other. We were, you know, colleagues who had not yet met. So we're going around and introducing ourselves virtually. And it comes to me and I go, and I'm Melody Schaaf. And all of a sudden it's like, oh my gosh, I don't know who I am anymore. Because my title had been Secretary of Education. That was my what is. That's what defined me at that point in time. In the same way, when you think about, or I think about you as the National Teacher of the Year, although that title doesn't go away, that's a pretty big responsibility for that year in time. And I'm curious if you had those same sort of things. It was a grieving part for me. There was a loss there at that point in time and not really understanding who I was. And I'm a lot older, so it's not like it's specific to age. I think we all go through it. And it was just, I had lost my identity for that period of time. And I'm just curious if you felt some of those same sorts of feelings.
I actually think for me, the bigger identity crisis was that prior to the National Teacher of the Year, I had seen myself solely as a teacher. And then during the National Teacher of the Year experience, I began to see myself as, like, first and foremost, always a teacher, plus, like, I had this much larger classroom all of a sudden. And so my classroom felt so big. And then when I went back to my home district, I think my identity crisis was, how do I merge these? Because everybody else saw me the same way that I had seen myself prior to that experience, which was, first and foremost, a classroom teacher. That was my identity. And so even though parts of my identity were shifting for me outside of that space, outside of my school, it wasn't really shifting for the people around me, which was fine. And in so many ways, I'm so grateful for that, you know? And even now, Most people don't really know what I'm doing outside of what they see me doing every day at school. And that can be a really liberating thing, but I had to get to the point where I was okay with kind of this dualistic self, right? This self that would function kind of in one way in one space and then in different ways in different spaces.
And we do that all the time, you know?
Yeah. And, you know, I think through all of our stories, I think it's okay if it's right for you in assessing where you are, where you're at, what's going on in your life, what are all of your responsibilities, to wait and to be in that space you talked about, Sarah, of uncertainty and hopeful and feel confident in the promise of something cool's going to come around the corner. Not, if not this, then what?
Right.
And so it isn't like a closed door on potential impossibility. There just might be. So for instance, when I decided not to run for office when my daughter was in high school, I just started to stay more involved in my own local community. So I wasn't driving back and forth to our state capital in a role away from home, but that I was actually able to do leadership things, learn new skills, try new things on for size more close to home. Yeah. And so I think for you, you've decided, now I ended up with this hybrid position. I think it's really cool. And sometimes we think of it as such an ending and such a door closing instead of thinking about, wow, if not this, then what?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And that's so true. It's, but again, like you just reiterated, it requires us to sit in that space of being really uncomfortable. And that can be a hard thing to do. And I think it goes back to then also making sure that we have established those, you know, circles of people that we trust, that can help us stay in that space, when it's not easy.
So how have your kids done throughout all of this, Sarah? What do they think about their teacher,
well,
your mom?
You know, wouldn't that be interesting to have them actually have them answer the question for you?
It would.
But I feel like I certainly can never really speak for them, but I feel like I could share what they would say. I think that they would say, especially now, I mean, we're almost a decade past that particular event that morphed into all other kinds of events, right? I think that they would say we're on the other side, and I think that they would say it's good. And I think that they would say, what they see is a mother who pursues her passion, a mom who works really hard, and a mom who knows the most important work she does is the work with them. So, I think that they would, I'm sure that there are some times, when they don't like it, that, we're eating leftovers too many nights of the week. And I'm sure that there are times when they would, you know, prefer that, mom was early to pick them up all of the time instead of late to pick them up all of the time, from their activities and things like that. But they also know, like, this is just part of it. And we have learned that as a family, we actually were just having this conversation last night. We were talking about, we had a kind of one of these crazy bonkers nights where everybody has to be somewhere different at the same time. And everybody, you know, was flexible. And we just talked about how when as a unit, as a whole family, we all give a little bit, we all, you know, lean into being flexible, that everything worked out just fine. You know, everybody was happy. Everybody got where they needed to be. And I think that's one of the skills that we've had to cultivate as a little crew of four, you know? That's the other thing. Like, I need help, you know, my parents help out, you know, I have a great list of, childcare, you know, people who can drive, who can do childcare for me. I've got that list, you know, always really ready to go. And, I'm always adding to it and, of course, being willing to create that circle with other parents as well. And I think that we have to remember that, you know, as women who are oftentimes responsible for other people, whether that means children or our parents or, you know, things like that, that part of that circle that we have to cultivate is the one of helpers. You know, we need to have our helpers.
Okay, I'm going to just jump in. And Deb has got to tell her brown food story. So, Deb, it just is so, you tell me this story so wonderfully because it's exactly what you were just talking about, Sarah.
Well, Sarah, when you were talking about, you know, your family gets along, and I think it's strength building. At least I like to think about that now with respect to them being responsible adults, that this was just part of it. But there was a particular time in my work where I was just all consumed, and we were opening up a new $15 million building, and I was responsible for all the operational components of it at my work. So I sat the family down, my kids, and said, okay, listen, you know, for the next month or so, your mom can't help you like at all. Like I'll hug you and give you kisses and I'll, you know, say hi, but I can't help you with your homework, no food, no chores, no things you need in your backpack, no school projects. You got to work with your dad. And, you know, your mom is just going to be around supporting you. So, okay, that time passed. And about 3 or 4 years later, I had another big project coming online. So I pulled the family back together. And, you know, of course, I've talked to my husband before this time. And if I sit down, I say, all right, remember that time when you had to go to your dad just for everything? Well, I'm back into one of those projects at work. And my oldest goes, oh, no. What, Mom? Not brown food. And I'm like, what? What is brown food? He said, well, apparently when my husband was taking over for a month, they only had brown food. It was like chicken nuggets, fish sticks, hamburgers, French fries, tater tots. And they said there was piles of it. It was always like massive amounts, like he was cooking for a farm family. But they did not see a piece of fruit or a vegetable for like a month. So as a family, we finally call it, you know, when you're really overwhelmed, we're in the brown food phase. And they all turned out all right.
And that's the thing, right? The thing is everybody's okay.
Everybody's okay.
Yeah.
Including
mom. It can't always be perfect. Yeah, exactly.
It cannot always be perfect. Far from it.
It can't always be perfect. Yeah. So, you know, there's a time we just got to give ourselves the ability to step back and just say, hey, that's all right. And again, it's really understanding what's going on, being candid about with those who are around you, asking for help when necessary. But I think you said it really, really well, where, you know, the outsourcing is something I'm going to take with me, Sarah, from this conversation about the importance of that. And I hope that other women who are listening are willing to do the same thing.
Sarah, you've just been an amazing guest. Thank you so much for being on our show and really sharing from the heart. I mean, you shared some really deep things that you had to work out with inside of you. And that, you know, that's a really a vulnerable thing to do. And we appreciate that you're willing to go out there to help other women.
Absolutely. I mean, I think that this is where the work really starts. You know, it doesn't, it starts with honesty, and it starts with, I think probably being vulnerable to ourselves and really being honest with who we are and where we're at and what we need and what we don't. And I think when we start to have those conversations with ourselves, we're able to have them with others. And when we have them with others, we're able to take action on them. And, you know, that's what we're after. That's what we hope for, that we can grow in those ways. So thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's just so great. Thanks again for being our guest, Sarah, and all the best to you in the future. And we appreciate everyone that listened in on this podcast today. We hope that you'll do it again. Thanks for tuning in. If you enjoyed our podcast, we'd be so jazzed if you rate us on whatever app you use to find us. And hey, be sure to tell all your friends about Influential She.
And please visit us at InfluentialShe.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn. And you know what? If you come up with a new one, please let us know. In the meantime, remember, stay influential.